You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios for hour number two. Y'all, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and yeah, we cover all of it like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, we're finishing up number one on today's Triple Dipper, where I've been talking about what I've referred to as kicking the anthill. And listen, the urban environment presents challenges all on its own that most other military operational environments do not have. And nobody better to come on and talk about that than Alabama's own Mike Durant. Mike Durant, you may recall, is a retired Chief Warrant Officer 4, spent the bulk of his career flying in special operations with the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. He's also, by the way, one of the participants in what is often referred to as Black Hawk Down or the Battle of Mogadishu, Operation Gothic Serpent. He wrote a best-selling book about it called In the Company of Heroes, and I highly recommend the book. He's been successful in post-military life, though, too, as the founder and CEO of Pinnacle Solutions. In his military career, he was a master aviator, 3 distinguished flying crosses, a Bronze Star for Valor, a Purple Heart, and he's on the air right now. Mike Durant, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Phil. Good talking to you again.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much for making time today. Listen, a topic that I know that you have spoken and written about quite a bit because you lived it is the Battle of Mogadishu. I mean, what that was like to plan and conduct. And by the way, the true battle we think of as Black Hawk Down was not the only foray into the city. You guys were there for a while dealing with the conduct of operations. Talk to us. Give us your unvarnished thoughts about the difficulties of planning for urban ops.
Well, I don't think anyone would argue that it's the most difficult place to conduct operations. And if you think about Somalia and how that turned out, I would classify it as almost a semi-permissive environment, meaning not everyone is necessarily an adversary. And that's a big issue because, you know, there's a difference between the Israelis having to fight Hamas and the Israelis having to fight the entire population of Gaza. I mean, there's two different challenges there. And as the anger continues to build and as people continue to die, you know, I just saw a report that, you know, apparently up to as many as 500 people were killed in a bombing attack in Gaza. That's going to fuel the fire and the anger and the hate against the Israelis who are acting, in my opinion, you know, justifiably. But in the end, it creates an entire population that is now going to fight or resist. And, you know, and the first challenge that creates is a lack of intelligence, because if they're anti-Israeli, which they probably are, getting human intelligence out of anyone is going to be very difficult. And it's one of the most valuable pieces. And every plan is based on intelligence, as you know. I mean, you have to start there. You know, understanding where the enemy is, where their defensive positions are, what kind of weapons they have, you know, and in this scenario, where are all the hostages and what are they likely to do with them? I mean, that's all most reliably going to come from human intelligence. And right now, they probably don't have access to that.
No, you're right. Every operation, all you can do is plan on what you know, but what you don't know is what changes the mission when you get on the ground. And, I mean, you as an aviator, you guys had to plan. I mean, talk about a difficult environment. You can't always land where you need to land. Obviously, you're putting troops, you're putting some of your operators down on rooftops or fast roping in. I mean, everything changes about the way you conduct yourself. And then at the same time, the narrow confines make it difficult to even find people once you're getting called in on, you know, some type of response operation.
Right. And, you know, and communications has improved tremendously, but I would speculate that it's, you know, urban operations is going to continue to create a challenge because line of sight communications don't work. The radio signals won't go through the buildings, or they won't go through a series of buildings. So in open terrain where you could talk freely back and forth and make sure everyone had situational awareness, which is critical to avoid fratricide, in an urban environment, oftentimes you lose contact with your own forces, and then you increase the risk of fratricide. It's just the list goes on and on and on. It also gives the advantage to the enemy because they know this terrain like the back of their hand. They've lived there, and for the Israelis, every door is going to be different. Every building is going to be different. Every situation is going to be different, and they're going to have to make their way through all of this while the enemy is sitting there with complete knowledge, complete cover and concealment, understanding the terrain, understanding where all the choke points are. It's another thing about urban environments is they sort of channel you into, certain paths or routes to get to your target, and that obviously creates a vulnerability. So it's just an awful situation. With the mix of civilians in there, it makes it hard to prep the battlefield, as we would, call it. In other words, put in some heavy firepower to suppress the enemy. That's going to lead to civilian casualties, and then that just further fuels the fire in terms of, how the population of Gaza is going to view this invasion.
Well, so you mentioned something there about civilians. Part of my background was the soft side of civil affairs, and we dealt with what happens with displaced civilians, they called them, on the battlefield. And that's a huge piece. I did a little check-in before the show started today, and basically the Gaza Strip is about one-third the size of Huntsville, which has a population of roughly 215,000. So one-third the size of Huntsville, 215. Gaza Strip has that limited one-third the size of Huntsville with 2 million civilians in it. And just trying to weed your way through the crowds of people at times, or watching, like I said, kicking the anthill. If you hit a building, people are streaming out of it. Who's a combatant and who's not is the shoot, no shoot moment that every soldier dreads.
Right. That's, I was just going to bring that up, what that densely populated area does is it causes another challenge in terms of identifying, who the true threats are and who is potentially an innocent civilian or a bystander. They're being given ample time. They should evacuate, but not all of them will. And it's just going to be very, very, very difficult.
Well, it is. And I guess I would ask, just in your own thoughts, what do you expect from Israel? I'm assuming that at some point you did some interaction with, I don't know about Israeli forces, but in your special operations days, there had to have been interaction with foreign governments. What do you think is going to wind up happening next?
Well, I think it helps you understand how they feel right now to call it their 9/11. I mean, that's sort of what's being thrown around. They feel now like we felt in 2001, and everyone's angry, rightfully so. Everyone wants to seek justice, rightfully so. And the Israeli military is very capable. They're highly trained. They're highly motivated. They've got great equipment. And when they decide to do whatever they decide they're going to do, which sounds like invade to eradicate Hamas, they will likely be successful, but it's going to be at a very high price.
Well, last question for you, Mike, and expand on this as you can. But we had retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin on the show the other day. I think you know him. He was actually there in Mogadishu on the ground as well, I believe.
He was. I do know him. Yeah,
a great guy. And his anticipation was that JSOC forces, all our special mission units that include folks like the 160th and include Delta and others, that he would anticipate that they are already spun up and probably forward deployed. What do you anticipate with the possibilities of JSOC U.S. forces rescuing American hostages?
I think it's possible. I think it has to be closely coordinated just because of all of the ongoing operations there. But, that's one of our primary missions. When there are Americans in harm's way in bad places in this world, we were the ones that got called upon to deal with these situations. So, whether we actually ever execute or not, I can guarantee you we are prepared to execute. And it's some of the greatest people that ever put the uniform on, in my opinion, having worked with all of these organizations before. And if it can be done, they're the ones that can do it.
Well, Mike Durant, we appreciate your service and we appreciate your friendship to the show and being on with us multiple times. But thanks again today for providing some color commentary on where things stand at the moment, all right?
It's my pleasure. It's great talking to you.
All right, you too, Mike. Take care. All right. Well, listen, there you have it. I would agree. I would anticipate that these are the finest among us in terms of the guys in uniform that are in the special mission units. And I would bet that they are already leaning forward on the issue. Whether they go in or not, we'll wait and see. But that was a guy who has flown them in before. All right, folks, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back, and time to switch gears. Let's talk about that speaker's race. Number two on the Triple Dipper. What's going on? Did they already have a vote? Yes, they did. I'll tell you how it worked out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.